Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Jace Graham, CEO of Rising Phoenix, who came back onto the podcast after originally coming on in April 2020. During the episode, Jace walks through the growth of the Rising Phoenix platform in real estate, minerals, and non-op, and how their team's focus on marketing and company culture have fueled their growth and led to more deals getting closed. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Jace had to say.
Jace, good afternoon, and welcome back onto the podcast. It's been a minute, April 2020. You're one of the first guys to come on right when I was losing my podcast virginity, so I appreciate you. You know, putting some faith in me back then and keeping it going. So it's lots changed in the industry and with your team. So looking forward to going over that. Before we jump in, I will say this. I'll give you a plug. Best and most innovative Christmas card I've ever gotten. So from marketing guy to marketing guy, I appreciate you even on the personal front.
Yeah, no, that was fun to put together. Definitely. But no, I remember that, just to step back, that podcast back in 2020, I was down at our ranch. COVID was taking over the world, and I was in our Airstream going live with you on that podcast. So you're right. A lot has changed since that time.
Well, we won't recant the entire Jace Graham story. For those who want to hear about that, please go back April 2020 episode. But let's definitely just give it a refresher, kind of the high level Rising Phoenix, and you guys have a couple of different arms too, and then we'll kind of talk about what's happened since April 2020. But why don't you kick it off up until April 2020? What were you guys all about? What'd you look like? How many funds did you have? And then we'll kind of talk about post April 2020 and the developments.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot has changed. We have multiple verticals now that Rising Phoenix companies operate. Back 2020, we had Rising Phoenix Real Estate and Rising Phoenix Royalties. And we were talking about the synergies that we had between the two verticals, how we were using some of the techniques and tactics that we learned from the real estate side of the business, buying single family residences in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, to apply that towards acquiring minerals through, you know, mass texting and cold calling and all that stuff. But, you know, back then we were raising capital on our third fund. You know, we had some investors that really believed, you know, obviously price was dropping, and everyone, you know, most people were running, you know, for the hills. And, you know, we had a solid investor base that really wanted to, you know, run towards that fire and put money to work, knowing that, you know, prices were extremely record time low, kind of that what we saw, kind of that what ensued after kind of while COVID was going on. So we put that capital to work and have a solid series of funds that we've started to raise capital on and place since then. Fast forward to where we are today, we've got six verticals. So not two, now we have six, spanning from hard money lending, private lending, where we do private mortgages on properties that we acquire and fix up, short-term rental, A-frame concept that we're rolling out this year. We've got our real estate company. Obviously, that's been growing, where we do a lot of fix and flip and wholesale flipping. And we also do that in our royalty company. So these worlds look very similar as far as how they operate, where we'll buy minerals on behalf of our mineral funds with the Rising Phoenix Royalties operating company. But we'll also look to find opportunity where, you know, maybe some of the larger private equity shops are picking up sizable positions in the Permian and even some of the fringe Permian right now that we will figure out a way to divest on, even though it's not, doesn't fit the buy box of our producing mineral funds, which we'll talk more about. And then, of course, now we have Rising Phoenix Capital, which is kind of the capital raising arm where we reach out to high net worth investors. We got a lot of investors that work with us. So we raise our capital privately. So it's a 506c offering is what we do. And we've got roughly seven, we're on our seventh fund, just rolled out our eighth fund, Maroon Bells Fund. So it's an upward trajectory for sure since we last talked.
Welcome to An Ounce of Prevention. The team at Our Recent Associates has partnered with Tim Powell to bring you brief legal updates on issues that matter to mineral owners, non-ops, and operators. We hope you find this segment informative. As always, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, Rachel Reese, at rreese@rreeselaw.com. Today's case is from the El Paso Court of Appeals in Texas and originated from a dispute in Reeves County. It's called Devon Energy Production Company versus Implat 2 LLC and answers the question of whether a deed from 1940 reserved to the grantor a 1/16th mineral interest or a fixed 1/16th royalty interest. In this case, Devon, who was the successor in interest to the grantee, argued that the reservation was for a mineral interest, which would give Implat a 1/80th royalty, while Implat argued that it was due 1/16th. The trial court agreed with Implat and Devon appealed. There were two parts of the deed that the court used to make its decision. Focusing on them one at a time, the first part reserved to the grantors an undivided 1/16th of any and all oil, gas, or other mineral produced on or from under the land above described. Now, Texas has a longstanding rule that conveyances or reservations that use the phrases in and under and that may be produced refer to a mineral interest. Here, the words at issue are produced on or from under. Devon argues that the rule does not require the exact words to be used, as long as similar words are being used. Implat is arguing that the words are not similar enough because the phrase starts with the word produced, so it must be referring to the minerals after they are produced, which would indicate a royalty interest. According to the El Paso Court of Appeals, that is not enough to bend Texas's in and under rule. The second part of the deed reviewed by the court involved executive rights. This one I am paraphrasing because the exact language doesn't matter that much. Here, the deed gives Devon the right to lease the land and to keep all bonus money and delay rentals. But it said that if and when oil and gas is produced, 1/16th of the value belongs to the grantors. So the question the parties asked the court was, were these words stripping a mineral estate of some of its rights or confirming that the royalty interest did not have those rights? This is the classic bundle of sticks analogy that we all know and love. A mineral owner has five separate and distinct rights that can be handed out how it pleases, much like a bundle of sticks. Those are the right to develop the minerals, 2, the right to lease the minerals, 3, the right to receive bonus payments, 4, right to receive delay rentals, and 5, the right to receive royalty payments. When you convey a mineral interest, if you don't say anything specific about these rights, it is assumed that you conveyed all these rights to the extent of the interest conveyed. Devon is arguing that Implat's predecessors reserved a mineral interest, but stripped themselves of all of the sticks except the right to receive royalties. Implat argued that this should be read as a confirmation that the deed was intended to reserve only a royalty interest. But the court pointed out that if that was the case, why go through the motions of stating all the rights that a royalty interest doesn't have? It's redundant. So the court held for Devon that the deed reserved a mineral interest and therefore Implat is entitled to a 1/80th royalty interest instead of a fixed 1/16th that it was seeking. In late November, Implat petitioned the Texas Supreme Court to hear the case. Unlike other courts of appeal, the Texas Supreme Court does not have to hear every case that is brought to it. So next we will hear if the court will take the case or if they are happy with the El Paso Court of Appeals' decision. So why do you care? Well, Implat's argument seems to turn on the placement of the word produced. If Implat is successful at the Supreme Court, we'll all need to be looking at whether our original grants say in and under and that may be produced or produced in and under. Our RNA will continue to watch this case closely. Subscribe to our blog, An Ounce of Prevention, or follow us on LinkedIn for the latest updates.
The information and material in this advertisement is general information about our practice and firm and is for educational and informational purposes only. This information does not offer specific legal advice, and the use of this information does not create an attorney-client relationship with our RNA or any of its attorneys. The information in this advertisement should not be considered legal advice, and persons should not act upon this information without first engaging professional legal counsel.
Yeah, and you know, my platform's evolved and expanded into non-op, and you guys kind of dipped your toes into the non-op game with JASPO last year. Mm-hmm. So you guys also, would you consider that a vertical, or is that under Rising Phoenix Capital, or how do you?
Yeah, no, yeah. So it's kind of fun. So in Rising Phoenix Capital, we have three strategies. We have a debt strategy that's going to be rolling out later this year where we're using the royalty income. And if somebody just wants a flat return and they want their money in for a certain amount of time, it looks kind of more like a bond based on how long they want their capital in play. We've got our royalty funds that we are known for. That's kind of our income strategy. And then JASPO, which is kind of the non-op participation that we've kind of do some fun. We did our first fund, like you said, late last year, is kind of our part of our growth strategy. So now we have a kind of a debt income growth based on kind of risk reward profiles of our investors. And so that's been fun kind of rolling. I mean, I came from, you know, an operating space. You know, my old man was an independent operator I'm a fourth generation. So when I worked with him, we did a lot of operated deals where we actually went out and, you know, got the leases, raised the capital and drilled the oil wells. Also participated in some non-op. So we're familiar with the space, but this is the first offering that Rising Phoenix Capital has actually rolled out and participating on, and we like it. We got a lot of interest in it from our investors. Obviously, people like that IDC, that intangible drilling cost write-off that you can get towards the end of the year. And so I've got people asking me, when's the next one rolling out?
Yeah, no, that's as I've gotten more educated on it, you know, anyone who has ordinary income exposure, obviously royalties income fits under that. It, you know, non-op becomes extremely attractive, as particularly AFEs, right? So, and the cash comes in fast and furious. So, you know, the joke in kind of the non-op circles is they call it the non-op treadmill. You know, the tax benefits are great, but then the cash comes in so heavy, you gotta buy more AFEs, right?
True.
And the same thing is you get in minerals and returns are great, cash comes on, then you gotta buy AFEs. And so, in a good way, you're on the cycle, right? On the treadmill. But one thing, you know, you talked about all the different kind of pies you have your hands in on the real estate side. Mm-hmm. I imagine, you know, there's some synergies too on the Rising Phoenix Capital front, in which you're developing relationships with real estate players, and, you know, they might want to diversify and play in both the non-op and the mineral space. And then there's the 1031 exchange aspect. Right. And you and I have talked about that a little bit. How prevalent is that in the broader Rising Phoenix strategy, the 1031 side?
Yeah, no, you know, we've seen an uptick in 1031, specifically coming from, you know, real estate investors, commercial real estate investors that are wanting to sell down their real estate portfolio. The term that the real estate guys really like about what we do on the oil and gas mineral side is that it's less noisy. They're going for less noise. Some of these guys that they like that monthly check coming in and they don't have to deal with the tenants and toilets. So yeah, we help facilitate that. And so, you know, we'll have people reach out to us and say, hey, I've got $1 million 1031 placement that's about to occur. Obviously, we have our producing mineral funds sitting on the shelf that we can start looking at and maybe carving out based on what that, you know, demand looks like. But we also have a pretty healthy pipeline of just, you know, opportunities that we're looking at right now that we can say, hey, this could be a fit, or maybe these two assets could be a fit. But it's definitely something that Rising Phoenix Royalties has now added to its kind of revenue stream of ways of kind of making money by helping kind of place that 1031 placement. Because you can't 1031 into one of our funds because you have to have direct title, but we can help 1031. And depending on what we do, sometimes we do a cash consideration on that. Sometimes we'll do a carry. Sometimes we'll do a combination of both. But we're definitely, it's kind of word of mouth right now with some of the real estate investors that we have that invest in our funds. They're telling their friends. And so I get a call or two a week about, hey, I've got a 1031. I'd like to visit with you about it. What are you seeing? And so we're helping kind of, you know, helping them with that investment.
I would love for you to kind of go into the weeds a little bit on it. So, right, it's a lockup period.
Yeah, 45 days to identify and 180 days to close.
And then the one thing that's interesting is if there's any debt component on the real estate, you can only 1031 the equity portion, correct?
Correct. Usually that real estate debt's not going to carry into the oil and gas mineral space. And so you have to, you know, basically refi that out, kind of like a mortgage. When you sell a house, you got to pay off that mortgage. It's interesting. We're actually talking to a couple of oil and gas more lending banks about, hey, could you help with that, where they could trade debt for debt. You're familiar with this type of debt, whether you're offering, say, a 36 time month multiple on it to help facilitate that. But yeah, you're typically seeing guys, they're paying down, you know, that outstanding debt on the real estate, transferring over. They may pay the tax on the delta and just invest what their profits are, but definitely something that I think that there's an opportunity there to maybe come in from a debt perspective and lend.
The other thing is, since you've executed these, I'm curious just the mechanics of it. So it has to be the exact amount. So if I have $3.17 million of real estate proceeds that I need to 1031, in a theoretical scenario, it's very hard to find a minerals asset that's worth $3.17 million. And it can't be like, oh, this deal's $3 million and then there's, you know, $170,000 left over. How is that now? Am I misspeaking, like that it has to be the exact amount?
They've got a certain amount of 1031 and the exact amount that can qualify for for that deferred tax. Okay. So let's just say they've got 3 million in 1031, and in your example, 3.17 deal comes by. They can either agree to pay the additional 170 just out of cash, you know, out of their
that's
own cash.
That's the cleanest way to do it. Yeah, this way, not overpaying. That makes sense.
That's the cleanest way. You know, sometimes, you know, we'll warehouse that. We'll acquire that internally. If it's under, let's just say that, you know, they got 3 million and it's 2.9 is the asset that we've got to where we agree on the pricing. You know, they may have to pay that tax on that 100. And so we try to, you know, it's, you're right. It's hard to just nail it right on the head, but there's ways around it.
Yeah. So when you guys are matching the deal flow, it makes sense to overshoot it a little bit. And then you have some optionality. They can pay cash, you warehouse, and that's clean. No, that makes sense.
And on the 1031 side, I mean, it's full transparency on what we're negotiating with a seller. If it's not on the shelf at, you know, with Rising Phoenix funds, and in that situation, we just say, hey, you know, here's what the asset looks like. You know, if you're looking for this return profile, obviously we have engineering behind it. They can do their underwriting and use engineering. If not, we can refer them to a third party reservoir engineering firm to validate what we're showing.
Well, let kind of, you know, a parlay of what you're talking about, you know, sourcing different deal flow outside the funds. So talk to me a little bit about the Rising Phoenix Royalties funds and what the portfolio looks like today. It is more of a PDP heavy strategy. So it's more of like a minerals royalties income fund, if you may. Right. But you guys are your marketing firm, you know, first, I think, and then you're doing all these things on the back of it. So you have a wide funnel and you're seeing a lot. And so
right.
Monetizing those marketing dollars and resources you're putting into creating that funnel, it's the optionality of 1031s. It's, you know, pairing an asset with a larger fund just because it doesn't fit the parameters of that. So I just wanted to kind of mention that, setting the table. You know, a lot of folks might, and me included, right, kind of think of you as, oh, Jace is just buying PDP, but you're getting a lot more across your desk. And so I think just for those listening, it might be next time at a happy hour or a conference or something, there's a different kind of conversation that they can have with your team, right, in regards to that. So talk to me about the funnel and kind of,
yeah,
you guys are seeing on a monthly basis and your basins and all that for those listening so they can reach out.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, it's all about optionality and having options. And across all of our verticals, especially, you know, Rising Phoenix Royalties and Rising Phoenix Real Estate, we've got multiple exit strategies. And I think that's important. We also can look at multiple basins. You know, so for our funds specifically, yeah, we're looking at yield. We're looking at, you know, cash flow. You know, the investors in those types of funds, they don't necessarily like white space. No matter how lucrative it can look down the road, they want a, you know, a monthly distribution, a nice little check that they can count on. And so that allows us to kind of open up our whole buy box to all over the country. Cause, you know, once you have production on wells, you can underwrite and engineer it. And so, you know, we've picked up a lot of assets all throughout the country. I'd say, you know, we see a lot of deals that we can get very competitive on in the Permian just because we're buying off the cash flow, where a lot of these larger private equity funds, they like the white space, or they need more of it. But we're heavy in the Marcellus. We're heavy in the DJ. We've got assets in the Barnett Shale. We've got assets in the Haynesville. We got some, you know, even conventional assets where, you know, could be, a, you know, we've got some assets up in Wyoming and under some coal bed methane. So it just opens up our versatility, you know, when we're looking at the PDP component and really not looking to pay any sort of upside for, you know, locations or PUD. I think that's important.
Do you do many co-bids or club deals where you're like the PDP partner in a consortium on some smaller deals? Have you ever gotten creative there?
Not really. We've kind of, you know, we're out, you know, we've got an acquisition team actually out here right now that's boots on the ground, kicking up opportunities direct to the source. But we've not done really any club deals per se. I know those deals are happening. We've not actually, you know, transacted that way. We're usually trying to buy everything based on the current cash flow and get all rights, all depths, everything that sure. We can obviously use down the road when we go to some sort of a sale to, you know, promote that sort of upside. But as far as, like, you know, we also, like you said, we also flip assets. So we're going to figure out a way to monetize on most any deal that comes across our desk. And so, you know, we've got, you know, our team is very good, you know, because on the real estate side, we do a lot of wholesale flipping, where we're basically flipping contracts and pulling out 15 to 20 grand per home. And we'll do, you know, 100, 150 of those a year. And so we've kind of perfected the art of that on the mineral side. I mean, we use our title company that does all of our real estate. They handle all of our flips on the mineral side. And so we've got an escrow agent, same title attorney. And so we're able to kind of utilize and divest on the flip as well if it doesn't necessarily fit the buy box for one of our funds.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors.
Looking to ramp up deal flow for your minerals and non-op ground game? Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has closed on over 120 deals, totaling $110 million in value, with deal sizes ranging from $50K upwards of $5 million. Whether you're looking for white space, permit, duck, PDP, AFE, or wellbore-only deals, the Texas Mineral Company has got you covered. For more information on how to source deal flow from the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagle Ford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests, or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Does your team ever struggle with employee turnover? What about right-sizing your team to fit your company's needs over time? Do you have the right accounting systems and software in place to maintain control and visibility on all your cost centers? If any of these things are challenges in your business, then Opportune's back office outsourcing could be the right solution. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com.
Now, let's focus on what is a core focus of the fund, buying PDP. Now, what's interesting is not all PDP buyers are the same. There's flush production, and there's a element of risk involved in buying something that is flush. Some guys, foundations and income funds who really want to take on no risk, and they're really just buying a coupon, if you may, they're going to say, I only want stuff that's got at least 36 months of production, right. As a criteria. And so there's a little bit of a cross section of PDP buyers out there. Where does Rising Phoenix fit in?
Wow. I mean, just looking at the profile across all of our funds, again, each fund's going to be just a little bit different. Our main goal is to try to, find good opportunities that we can, fit decline curves to and forecast out future production and then move the capital into those assets as quick as possible, assuming that we're getting a discount in the value. If I look at all of our funds in total, I'd say, 25 to 30% of the assets we acquire are a little bit more flushier within that 1 to 3 year period. I'd say 50% of the assets are probably sitting in that 36 plus month time frame, and then the balance is more mature assets that are flat as a pancake. So, we don't say, there's only, 3 months or 4 months worth of production. We can't, we're not going to buy it. We want it to kind of level out so we can predict it. It all gets thrown in. I mean, these funds, you're looking at, fund sizes in the 10 million range that are going to, have, 20 to 30 unique assets with, 400 to 500 wells in them. So we're split out, we're diversified, but if you were to ask me, I like the 36 month type stuff, but we'll definitely jump in. We've got a very good petroleum engineer on staff that can kind of identify and kind of help pull, the production numbers from offsetting wells to kind of get us where we need to be.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting, especially in shale wells. So let's remove conventional for now. Uh-huh. That's very flat, low decline rates of, call it 4 to 8% a year. A shale well, to just pick a number out of thin air, 70-80% of the reserves are being produced out in a well and, call it an 18-24 month period. It's pretty significant.
Right.
So timing of commodity pricing is pretty important when you're buying kind of the front end of production.
Right.
So in an extreme price volatility period of the market, where there's extreme bid-ask spreads and you have that dynamic of, you know, these steep declines. And it, how have you guys navigated that? It's got to be the biggest gridlock in buying PDP is when there's a drop off in pricing. Like I'll give you an example. In the Haynesville, obviously we enjoyed $8-$9 gas.
Yeah.
A little over a year ago. Now it's $1.50. Who gets what deals get locked up the most? It's the PDP stuff. The white space in the Haynesville is still trading fairly flat to what it was before. And so when you guys are focused on that, is it just, hey, we were making 100 calls a day. Now we need to make 500. Like, what is the tactical approach to that to just continue to bring stuff into the fund?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, commodity prices fluctuate quite a bit. There's no doubt about it. I always tell my, you know, real estate investors that want to get into, you know, in one of the funds, I was like, you know, you're never going to see a house go from, you know, $200,000 in value to $100,000 in value in 1 year. You can see oil go from 80 to 40 or get nat gas go from 8 to $1.60 as of today, right? So what we typically do is we're going to be, you know, if we feel that, you know, the commodity price is getting a little bit on the higher end, we're going to discount that strip when we're running our reserve analysis to get to a number that feels good. If it's on the other end, like a nat gas right now, you know, it's kind of hard to transact because, you know, we'd love to transact and buy at $1.60, but just, you know, the seller sentiment is not there yet, maybe in a few months. So what we're really good at that I think, you know, there's a lot of folks maybe in the industry, this is just, you know, meticulous follow-up. I mean, once you're inside our CRM and our database, you know, there's a constant follow-up from 5 years back to today. And so, you know, we're nurturing those relationships. Our guys are very good on the phone and talking through kind of just where you're at, how things are looking. And a lot of times, you know, we'll see sellers, it's kind of based on a life event to where maybe it's not necessarily tied like, you know, some of these more sophisticated oil and gas mineral companies where they are looking at that kind of stuff, but they just, people want to cash out today for whatever reason that may be. And so we're looking for those frogs to kiss per se versus, you know, just trying to go head to head with anybody else out there that's, you know, just paying the highest price.
What, you know, I think investors always love to ask the question around TAM, total addressable market. You know, you guys are like roughly 10 million-ish size funds, right? So I think that's a nice size to comfortably deploy at value. And it's not like you're trying to do hundreds and hundreds of millions, but
right.
Nonetheless, PDP is usually fractionalized. It's usually small and it's hard to buy at scale. When you guys, you know, look at this and you talk to investors and they're asking about, you know, what does the market look like? I think a lot of folks are like, what's left? You know, there's so many mineral companies. It's all going to be bought. I've talked in past episodes about the generational wealth transfer from baby boomers and continued fractionalization. But how do you guys look at it as like what, quote unquote, what's left? And when you have those conversations with investors, how's that go?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at just our average purchase price on an asset across all of our funds, I mean, we're averaging around 300 to 400,000 per transaction. So these are not little bitty, you know, $20,000-$25,000 transactions. They're a little larger. We see larger deals come through and sometimes we transact on smaller deals. I'd say our minimum acquisition price on a deal is going to be probably about $25,000. As far as, you know, what we're looking at, I mean, as far as the opportunity, again, having such a, for the funds, having such a big buy box allows a lot of opportunity for deals, for us to go after deals versus very tight buy box. We're buying in the core of XYZ Basin. So we've got no issue right now with deal flow. I was just about to pull up our pipeline and just kind of see that, but it's, you know, on the buy side, I mean, it's, we've got more deal flow than capital raised. And so I guess, you know, that could be a good thing from an investor perspective. So I say, like, we keep our funds. They're going to be, we'll probably do 20 to, you know, 30 million in placement a year. That's kind of what we're targeting. We're a small lean shop. And so we don't need to go after and deploy 100, but, you know, we look back on it and we've got, you know, quite a bit of capital under management now, and we're just going to continue to grow that. But it's funny. I mean, even in the Permian Basin where, you know, you hear about things just being picked up, and we just did a, you know, massive, you know, deal. When I say massive, I mean, for us, you know, $10 million transaction, you know, 1,000 net royalty acre on a family that wanted to sell. And they had, you know, four or five relatives that all jumped in on it. So those opportunities are still out there. And you would think, I'm like, God, I mean, we're not doing anything anything special, anything sexy. There's no silver bullet. I mean, it's ground game, picking up the phone, talking to people, having relationships, doing the follow-up, understanding the sales process, teaching the sales process is what we do. We're very big on that. I think that's some things that people kind of lose sight of is like, you know, what type of disc profile? Who am I talking to? And what's their motivation? And what are their deal killers? And how can I overcome that kind of stuff? And so that's the kind of thing that we kind of work really hard on, is really kind of, teaching sales and that sales process to our team, to our acquisition guys, so they can have those good conversations. But I mean, right now, I mean, we're seeing just, you know, there's a lot of opportunity out there for our funds on the PDP side, just because we're nationwide. But even on the flip side, where we kind of focus in the Permian and the Delaware and the Midland Basins, you know, really large pipeline right now on deals that we're just getting into and you know, finding opportunities. And some of these larger shops, you know, they're not looking, you know, they're not spending as much of the time on the ground game.
Are you serious about networking and deal making in the minerals and royalty space? If so, I expect to see you at the MARC Mineral and Royalty Conference at the Post Oak Hotel in Houston on April 15th and 16th. This must-attend event will bring together over 600 attendees for two action-packed days of networking and discussions. Be sure to visit mineralconference.com to get registered for your ticket today.
Let's use that as a good segue. You're talking about teaching the sales process. You know, let's first start with kind of company culture and some of the things you guys are doing. You know, we've become good friends. You're a great guy. Like, I think people are going to have fun going to work with you every day. I've been to your office and it's a good vibe. And, you know, I've worked with teams where it doesn't feel like that. You walk in and people are walking on eggshells, and so all that stuff matters. I think you're really proud of the company culture you've built. And I think you bring up a good point. At the end of the day, you know, it's not anything overly sexy, but there's execution and elbow grease and hanging around the rim. And that's really what this game is. So, you know, I can appreciate, you know, being a sales guy my whole career. There's certain times I'm not the best at, like, doing ops. That's not my skill set. So like building and scaling myself and a team was never really my thing. But there was a couple of times, you know, in my earlier career when I was selling software and everything, where you listen to someone, you go, oh, you should have said that. You should have said this. And it was hard to template it because it was very situational. And like, you know, you would read it and then you would come up with something completely different than the previous 100 calls. I'm curious how you go about building that into a team culture and just what you guys are doing in general. Over to you.
Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, and you're right. I mean, it's heavy sales and understanding that sales cycle. From what we're doing with our guys, you know, and this spans from the mineral royalty team to also the real estate team, is, you know, I mean, there's morning huddles every single day. There's accountability. There's metrics. We're looking at numbers, how many calls, how many conversions, how many offers, how many closed opportunities. And we kind of understand, you know, what that conversion rate is, so that, you know, your mineral advisors or your real estate acquisition guys know what winning looks like. Okay, that's important. We're also game filming. We're going through prior calls and listening to them, and how could we adjust? And hey, what was going on here? And how could you have answered that a little bit differently? We're talking about, like I said, the disc profile. Are they a driver? Are they interactive? Are they more, you know, just more social? Or are they more cautious? And then how do you adjust accordingly? So these things we talk about, this is what we talk about in every single day. So it's not just like, hey, you're going to go watch some video on sales and then you're going to be good at it. I mean, we're in the trench every single day, teaching, talking, trying to adjust, get better. Our team wants to get better. And so they're open to the criticism. They know that we're going to be coming from like more of a coach standpoint. But I think it's important. I mean, you know, with the culture, I mean, that's, you don't just say, hey, I want culture. I want, you know, we want this kind of culture. I mean, you got to like live, breathe, you know what, at every single day. And it starts with just, you know, transparency within our team. And, you know, read a phenomenal book several years back called The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack. And it just talks about like open book accounting. And I was like, you know what? F it. We're going to do this. So each one of our verticals, they're projecting top line revenue. They're projecting their COGS. They're projecting their expenses. They're expecting the net profits. So they got a stake in the outcome. And so what's fun is now that we're starting to do this and we're talking about it, we're, you know, our team is learning financials about the businesses. They feel like there's buy-in. They can see it's not just some veil behind the numbers. but they can come in and start making impact and see the numbers adjust. And so we're doing these things called these mini games every single quarter. Like right now, we got a race car track up. Each one of the verticals has their own numbers that they're trying to hit. And if they do and they hit their number in the quarter, we're going to go do something fun. Like, you know, right now it's around NASCAR because there's a big NASCAR event towards the end of the quarter. We're going to go actually get into NASCARs and go race those cars, which is a lot of fun. So it's not always a monetary thing. It's, you know, how do you get people involved and, you know, kind of fight for the mission and give them a stake in the outcome. The other thing I'll add is we're real big on goal setting. It's important. You know, we talk about the wheel of life and that career is one spoke of the wheel. Okay. And so, you know,
where did you pick up wheel of life? I'm curious. I think wheel of life is probably the most fundamental thing you can do for fulfillment.
I learned about it through Dave Ramsey. And so I was at a conference 15 years ago and he talked about it. He talked about, hey, if you push really hard on career, you may be lacking some more on social or leisure, but you need to be aware of where your wheel is. And so what I do is I take stock, you know, once a quarter on where I am on a scale of 1 to 10 in each one of those areas. But we teach that. We tell people like, hey, we want you to be thinking about, yeah, career is important, but what else? Because if that person is getting better holistically, then they're going to show up better. They're going to learn more. They're going to want to be engaged because you're focusing on them as a person. So we step in, you know, within the first week, it's a 1-3-5 plan that we do. What's the one main objective that you want to do on the career side? You can do a 1-3-5 across the entire wheel of life, but you know, if it's, I want to make 150 grand. Great. Now let's step into that. You know, what are the three goals to achieve that objective? It could be effort. It could be whatever. It could be, I want to improve my sales development. Okay, great. Now what are the five tactical things that you have to do either every day, week, or month to achieve that strategy to hit that goal? And we're talking about that. We're holding people accountable. And so it's fun and we're all doing it. So it's a fun culture to kind of be involved in and to see kind of thriving as we're growing.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who since 1929 has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, SCOOP/STACK, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford. With deal sizes ranging from 50K upwards of 5 million and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs, the Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Scaling up your portfolio while minimizing G&A is the name of the game in the minerals and non-op space. Whether you're a brand new fund, an established team who's growing quickly, or a fully developed portfolio in harvest mode, Opportune's back office outsourcing team can help. Stop worrying about all the headaches that come along with day-to-day accounting and back office operations and contact Opportune today. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
Hi there, it's Rachel Reese at R. Reese & Associates, your outhouse counsel. You may ask, what's an outhouse counsel? Well, it's a law firm that is focused on the day-to-day legal tasks that normally would be completed by your legal department. Our attorneys in Houston and DFW have spent their careers in both in-house positions and at large law firms and can provide your company with the efficient and responsive service you would expect from your own legal department for things like contracts, transactions, and title opinions at a fraction of the cost of what you're used to paying. So whether your company has no legal department or your legal department is a mighty team of one, we can help. Give us a call at 832-831-2289 or learn more at rreeslaw.com.
Listen, I love all that stuff. It really is so important. I picked up Wheel of Life from Tony Robbins. And so I have call it 6 or 7 business categories, and I have 6 or 7 personal categories. And those actually, I remember I first did those in 2011, 2012. And then I redid them about 3 or 4 years ago. And it's funny, when I started my own business and I became married with kids, those things change quite a bit. But I've been on a weekly basis, and I've had different ways of doing this as technology and different apps and stuff have formed, but essentially on a weekly basis, I'm reviewing these categories. And not every week is, you know, some weeks I don't really do it as much. Some I'm planning out a lot, but I kind of reverse engineer. I go, you know, what makes me tick? What if I'm a sales guy, and I had this in my past company, biggest sales week of my career, and I get to Friday afternoon and I feel a little depressed, not, you know, super depressed, but like just not on fire. And I go, if I'm a sales guy and I love sales, why do I feel like this? And then another week, it's a little slow, but I'm on top of the world. I'm feeling on fire. Why is it? And I start to reverse engineer that. And it's a combination, a recipe of ingredients that make you feel that way. And it changes. And that's the thing, you know, they say the science of achievement, the art of fulfillment. And I think the question I want to put back to you on goal setting is, you know, how much time do you take? You're doing the DISC profiles, which is brilliant. So you're better understanding what the personality of the individual, but the goal setting is going to be different for everybody. And it's right. Not always monetary. The real mind fuck for me is, and I would consider myself a good salesperson.
Right.
I'm actually not motivated by money. It's not to say I don't like money.
I'm not either. I agree.
I kind of had an aha moment because my wife was always like, what's your big North Star goal? And I never had an answer for it. You know, I'm a big Gary Vaynerchuk fan, and his right. North Star goal is buying the New York Jets, right? So I didn't have the equivalent of that, yet I work harder than anyone I know, and I enjoy it every second of the way. So that doesn't mismatch. So I'm not like lost in the process.
No.
And I was talking to an advisor of mine, and they're like, yeah, of course you don't have you're thinking about it monetary wise. And so for me, it's impact and philanthropy. Yep. And so that's the motivation to make more money is to really do more impact. And so that, you know, I feel like I was on the right path, but going a little blind on pinning the tail on the donkey with that. And then I finally figured that out. And the more you figure that out, the more you start getting in a rhythm, and then the game gets fun. Right. And so from a team perspective, you know, I would love a couple of war stories on stuff like that, but it's cool because this is really what it's all about. Right. And like you said, if they show up better, they're gonna close more deals. They're gonna make more money. All of it. The tide rises all boats.
Well, then it's more fun to be around. So you're right. I mean, impact. That's it. Like you're right. Money doesn't motivate me. I mean, money's a tool. That's it. And we have all these verticals and all this stuff, and it's great and it's fun. But what really motivates me is seeing the transformation in the person. Seeing a guy or a gal come in and not know shit about what's going on and working through the whole process with them. And then all of a sudden they look back and they're pulling in 6-figure plus a year because of the transactions that are closing. Now, what they do with that, we also encourage that. So, hey, if you want to go buy something, go buy something. But what we really like to encourage, like, you know, think of kind of just some of the events and life events that you'd be doing, some of the stuff just that you could be, you know, doing with you and your family. I mean, here's, you know, just kind of, you know, I mean, I've got, I do mine. I go pen to paper. Yeah. I got to go analog because I get wrapped up in all the whiz bang tools, notifications and all that stuff. I just go pen to paper once a quarter and I'll kind of draw that wheel. And it's just taking stock. And like you said, Tim, it's awareness that you're right. Things do change and, you know, things that were once important may not be as important, but as long as you're aware of what's going on. But I mean, for us, I mean, it's just cool seeing guys come in and show up. We've got a calendar on a wall called the Big Ass Calendar. I kind of pulled the concept from Jesse Itzler. I mean, it's kind of what he kind of put together. But guys are guys are on 75 hard here. And we're pushing each other and holding each other accountable to that, which is cool. Just people are getting better at freaking life. And that's important. At the end of the day, I mean, we're not going to be here that long. I mean, all this, you know, flipping minerals, flipping real estate, it's all fun, but what's the bigger purpose? And like you said, I mean, for me, it's impact. For me, it's like to see these guys around me elevate themselves and to see what's possible with their life, you know. And I'm just saying, hey, listen, I'm coming in here, I'm moving things around, we're adding new verticals, we're trying this and trying that, and oh, by the way, you can see how we do it. There's nothing to hide, you know. And so that's the rewarding piece, because then they see it, and then, you know, people walk around here with an entrepreneurship mindset, like they own the place, because they do. It's not, don't do it for me, do it for you. You know what I mean? I'm going to support you, and I support you, and you get better as you. Guess what? The lag measure is we make money.
Yep. So no, it's not the goal. It's just, it happens along the way, and usually happens, in my experience, you make more of it because you're doing it for other reasons that are more fulfilling and impactful. No, listen, that's all right. Shit, I could end on that note, because what better note to end the episode on that kind of stuff? But would love to just, let's have a little fun. Let's talk tactics. You're always,
yeah, man.
You're always an open book. And
yep.
I think AI is definitely a lot more prevalent since we spoke. You know, I recently, and I'm going to have Christy on for an episode here in a little bit. I just launched an offshoring agency in the Philippines. So I've been using a team in the Philippines for 4 years, yep. Multimedia, data research. Just, it's a cost of labor arbitrage. It's a time zone arbitrage. It's a peace of mind arbitrage for a small business to just, you know, have a project manager that then deals with all these different people part time. It's really cool. And it goes back to the whole thing we're talking about. I got really lucky with some amazing people, and, you know, I asked them what their goals are and visions are, and, you know, backing them to step on their own to start, you know, creating their own culture and their own company was the answer to that. So that's kind of a fun thing I started in January, but there's immense benefits to that. Speed. This has happened to me multiple times. And I just came back from two dinners this week. So, you know, you get a deal lead at 10 PM, you know, three bottles of wine in, and someone sends it to you. And then you go, hey, Chrissy, can the team clean this up? I needed something in the morning. And then boom, it's ready when I wake up. I mean, that's powerful. So yeah. Speed on underwriting and everything is cool, but that's kind of a, you know, something for me that's been focused on it, obviously, because I just launched this business, but we've looked at AI for certain things. Like, over to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, 15 years ago or so, I read the book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and it kind of just, poof, you know, that was one of those, you know, when you look at, you know, the four or five books or so, that was one of the ones that just, you know, blew my mind. And we've had virtual assistants, you know, for the better part of 8 years. I've got one in the Philippines. I've got one in Mexico and one in Spain. She was in Ecuador, but moved to Spain. So we've got three virtual assistants on our team helping in various aspects. But on the mineral side, our guy in the Philippines, he's actually, you know, taking checks ups. We actually have him working his schedule. So he's not, you know, middle of the night falling asleep, but no. So what, you know, our team does and is, you know, they'll send over check stubs and, you know, he's pulling the data off, getting it all set up, getting it loaded in for the petroleum engineer to start running first thing in the morning. So he's live and going. So no AI there, just, you know, utilizing some of those advantages, if you will, using virtual assistants to kind of help. We got some that are doing the transaction coordination that are in the back end that are phenomenal at what they do. As far as the AI piece, you know, we've been,
by the way, real quick, I read 4-Hour Workweek, which is what got me into virtual assistants too. So it's funny.
Yeah. I was like, what? I gotta get a VA. I don't even know what that means. But anyways, but as far as like some of the AI, yeah, you need to be aware of it. You need to, you know, from whether it's, you know, you're utilizing ChatGPT all the way to, you know, we just demoed a AI outbound cold calling company that is, you can literally create the bot and he's actually making the calls. Sounds a little awkward, but. And I'm not sure if we're going to do it, but it's something that was just kind of intriguing, you know, with the English accent, it can kind of mask some of the awkward pauses, but that stuff is out there. And from the chat bots that, you know, we kind of use a little bit on our websites and whatnot to where they can kind of funnel stuff through very quickly. And so you don't have to be awake in the middle of the night and somebody comes on your website and starts, you know, trying to chat with you. But all that stuff is real and that's happening. You know, as far as, you know, tactics, I mean, we're heavy in the CRM. We're heavy in follow up. We have visibility across, you know, all of our deal flow. The biggest thing that I don't see happening in our space is just follow up from maybe a deal that happened 3 years ago. What I tend to see is like deals come, we look at it, we underwrite it, and then we can't get it, and then deal goes, and then we never revisit it. Now we track all that now. When I say now, we've been doing it for the last 3 years, so now we know golly, and we call it the bone pile. And we're going in and picking up opportunities in the bone pile that, you know, maybe, you know, they still haven't transacted or sold. And then we just restart the conversation and see where they are at that point in time because of the time frame. But
where do you draw the line on metrics and over tracking to where you have insignificant things? Metrics are so important because, as I say, if you can't read the scoreboard, you can't tell who's winning or losing the game.
Exactly.
My old company, and they were a multi-billion dollar company with 30 portcos, and they were trying to push down the same KPIs on every business, different industry, didn't work. They'd be like, oh, Tim, your so-and-so metric is down 13.3%. And I'm like, but I just had the biggest quarter of my career. What are you talking about? Well, the KPIs, we want to hit this and that. And I hated all that bullshit.
Yeah.
But that was always like, okay, I'm being stubborn. I know I don't like this. I know it's important. But fuck it, I don't want to do it anyways. But there is a fine line of like looking at too many KPIs to where it can be misleading. You know, it's like, oh, this is up or down, but is that a really important indicator on doing deals? There's obviously number of phone calls, right? That kind of stuff. But where have you tried to hone in on what's good?
Yeah, I mean, for us, I mean, each vertical has two respective scorecards. We've got a marketing scorecard and we have a sales scorecard. And we try to keep it that basic per se, because you're right. It could be analysis paralysis. Great book, Measure What Matters by John Doerr, kind of open up the idea. Because if you're not measuring, how do you know what's working? You know, how do I know that this direct mail piece is working versus this one? And so that's the important part. But we try to just keep up with it, just, you know, some high level metrics, especially for our sales team, just so that they know where they're winning and where they could use improvement. And so that's, you know, from calls made to conversations to viable leads to offers made to contracts signed to deals closed on out the door. And we can look at that conversion cycle all the way down and know, hey, this guy needs help here on the intro of his phone call. Just that first 30 seconds, he's not coming in. He sounds like everybody else. But he could come in and say, hey, this is Jace with the Rising Phoenix. Hey, give me 30 seconds. If you don't like the call, hang up on myself. Like, just that is different. You know what I mean? It's a little funny, you know? And so that person actually may have a conversation. So we can look at that stuff and kind of then coach them accordingly if they're just, you know, kind of going through just a standard script. But on the marketing side, I think it's important. We're looking at each marketing channel that we're putting actual dollars into and looking at the conversion. So we're tracking how that lead's coming in into our CRM to figure out what that cost per lead is important. And if something is really working, we want to put more money towards that marketing strategy.
Yeah, I mean, is it hard to do the cost per lead, cost per deal type metrics, or is it pretty quantifiable once you, you know, get enough data?
Yeah, it's pretty quantifiable. I mean, you know, there's some marketing channels that, you know, that aren't as easy, but we are able to like add phone numbers to each type of one and track that response rate. So you can kind of tie it back in into the CRM. But sometimes you just have to file, hey, how'd you hear about us? That always works.
Sometimes it's just, you know, ideally you do all types of marketing. You obviously want to hone in on what works the best, but, you know, sometimes, you know, the diamonds in the rough come from the most unexpected place. That's why as a networker, you know, even sometimes when you're tired, you don't feel like going, you always kind of got to be in hanging around the hoop, right?
And I mean, just like the least expected person that I would think would sell, all of a sudden ready to go. So it's, you know, and I think talking about that internally with your team and saying, hey, here's an example and pointing to it is important.
Well, Jace, this has been a blast, my man. Thank you for coming on. I don't know if you want to kind of loop it back. The floor is yours to close out the episode. Just closing messages, kind of bringing it back to Rising Phoenix and ways to collaborate on deal flow for the groups out there. I'll let you reiterate that. But otherwise, always good to see you. It's great to have you back on and looking forward to catch up soon.
Yeah, no, listen, Tim, I appreciate it. I always enjoy popping on the podcast and it's been way too long. So I'm glad we're able to do it. I would just say, you know, Rising Phoenix, we're opportunistic. We're entrepreneurial in nature. We're looking for good people that are a core value fit for our team. It's important. So if you're interested in learning more about that, we'd love to visit with you. I'd also say we our next fund, maroonbellsfund.com, is out. We're raising capital now. So looking forward to maybe speaking with some folks that may be interested in investing in one of those types of opportunities. But no, the space is a matrix. It's always changing. There's opportunity everywhere. Our glass is always half full. I mean, you know, we're going to make money in an up market, down market, sideways market. I don't care who's running for president, who gets president. We're going to figure out a way to, you know, make something happen. And so I just think it's, you know, a mindset that we carry here and looking forward to, you know, what's coming up in 2024.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again, Jason. Take care.
All right, buddy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.